you know, on the path that leads to better nationhood, then French, you know, the French may continue to have stronghold, you know, on the continent.
Well, there you have it. African nations need to remain vigilant because even after the withdrawal of French troops from Niger and other Sahel states, this neocolonial power is still intent on meddling and looting the continent's natural resources. Welcome to our Africa Rising section that focuses on interesting events in Africa, from innovations, achievements in science and technology, to arts and culture. Now, amid the U.S.-Israeli genocide on Palestinians in Gaza, millions of people worldwide have come out to express solidarity with oppressed Palestinians. These acts of solidarity are in different formats, such as demonstrations, boycott campaigns, vigils, arts, and music. An African musician from Eritrea has joined the Palestine Solidarity Campaign through his music. He is Lane Tadese, the singer of Palestine Says No More. We have contacted Mr. Tadese to talk about his music. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the invitation. Just want to say thank you, Mubarak.
Now, first, can you tell us what motivated you to compose this song?
It's a very long story, and being that I am from that type of situation, like where I come from in Eritrea, and Eritrea has been through a lot. So for me to be able to connect to what's going on in the region, especially to the Palestinian, you know, people, since the 1920s, I mean, you can go on for decades and decades, and the silence that's been, you know, taken by the international community during those times, because there wasn't any media that was giving the opportunity to show what was going on. And for it to take place now in this day and age in 2023, it's mind-boggling, you know. And it doesn't, you know, for me, it's like a no-brainer. I have to speak up. I have to, you know, get involved in what's going on in the region, especially to the Palestinian people. They are the people that's been oppressed, that's been just taken away everything. They just want to take everything away from them, their identity. So that alone, it bothers me even more than anything in this world. For someone to really try to extinct and take away your identity, your true identity, who you are and where you come from. And the originals that were there, it's like history repeating itself, but in real time now. So it's just, I mean, I the only thing I can do is provide my artistry, provide my the music and the content to really bring awareness to the rest of the world. I'm sure there's a lot of artists doing the same thing, and I applaud them. This is the time for everyone to come together and really rally behind the people of Palestine. That's one of the main things, just me being from that region. Eritrea was under occupation, under oppression. Now, the same thing has been happening, like literally not too far from us. So Palestine is not far from where I come from, even though I'm here in the U.S. I feel the pain. I feel the agony. I feel the stress. I feel just the distraught, the chaos. It's not fair. So we have to speak up.
An interesting insight indeed. Now, Mr. Tadese, how can the language of art be utilized effectively to expose the Israeli apartheid regime and its criminal acts?
Well, I mean, as you can see right now, Israeli regime is purely naked of what they're doing. They're being exposed through social media, through the lens of everyone's cameras, because we're in the age of anyone can record anything. They're so naked, yet they still think they are innocent. They still think they are fighting. They're using a pretense of fighting a terrorist group. No, that has nothing to do with a terrorist group. It has everything to do with occupation. It has everything to do with settlement. So all these things are being exposed. So they're naked. Musicians are exposing them, showing in real time what they're doing. They're not defending themselves. That's not what you call defense. That's what you call genocide. Yeah? Ethnic cleansing. That's what it is. We're seeing it in real time.
No doubt everyone is seeing what is happening in Palestine. Now, Mr. Tadese, our last question. What role can artists across the world play, regardless of their color or language, in confronting the Israeli genocidal war against Palestinians?
The main mission of artists across the world is basically when you see something that I've just been talking about, this type of event, it brings people together. And when artists come together, the ones that are conscious, the ones that are, you know, that understand that what is taking place is something that they don't stand for. And music really is the weapon that can really galvanize and bring people together, because you're conveying the message. You're conveying the feeling, the pain, the hurt that you feel. So you have to express it with music. People would like, it's like a pain soothing medication. Music is a medication, but also can be used as a weapon to bring awareness to the world. So it's bringing a lot of musicians together. It's bringing a lot of people. People from all over the world are really honed into this, what's really taking place in Palestine. We're only focused on Palestine. I don't even want to mention their name, the genociders. So they're losing. They're losing in so many different ways because of how artists, musicians are coming together. When people come together, the enemy will disappear.
Well, indeed, the enemy will be vanquished and the oppressed will be victorious. I'd like to thank Lion Tadese, an Eritrean musician and composer of the song Palestine Says No More. Now, that's it for this week's edition of Africa Today. And we are signing off by inviting you to parts of this resistance song.
Never seen a mother cry till I see a child die. Never seen a child cry till I see his mother. What you've done, you've taken her only son. It's too late, we know your game. You sucked the blood from her vein. Children will never forget atrocities and pain. Can't you hear them crying? We must wipe away the stain. I said no more, no more, no more. And we said no more, no more, no more. The world is with you. Yes, we are with you.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. in the limelight.
A U.S. District Court judge has dropped most, but not all, counts in Donald Trump's January 6th civil case. The move is likely a win for Donald Trump and his fellow defendants, though the lawsuit will still move forward with the core allegations on which it was filed. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. has ruled that only part of a lawsuit filed against former President Donald Trump over the death of Capitol Police officer Brian Sicknick may move forward, issuing a split decision in the lawsuit brought by his longtime partner. U.S. District Court Judge Amit Mehta ruled on Tuesday, 2nd of January, that Sicknick's partner, Sandra Garza, can proceed with her civil lawsuit against Donald Trump over the officer's death after the 6th of January 2021 riots, but only on two of the counts. Judge Amit Mehta dismissed the wrongful death and negligence civil counts against Donald Trump, but will allow Garza's claim against Trump's under D.C.'s Survival Act to proceed. The Survival Act allows an individual's legal representative to pursue legal action on their behalf after their death. Sandra Garza is a representative of Brian Sicknick's state. Garza filed the lawsuit against Donald Trump as well as January 6 defendants George Tanios and Julian Carter. Carter was sentenced to more than 6 years in prison after he admitted to spraying the police officer. George Tanios pleaded guilty to lesser charges. Neither of the men were criminally charged with Officer Brian Sicknick's death. We are pleased to see that our lawsuit in pursuit of justice for the late Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who died in the aftermath of the January 6th insurrection, has been permitted to continue. We are now considering our next step options to include deposing former President Trump, according to Mark Zaid, one of the attorneys representing Sandra Garza. The D.C. Medical Examiner's Office previously said police officer Brian Sicknick died of natural causes after suffering from two strokes at the base of his brainstem, caused by a blood clot in an artery, and noted that all that transpired played a role in his condition, a reference to Sicknick's experience defending the Capitol on 6th of January 2021. In a separate criminal case, Donald Trump is accused of attempting to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election, including through his actions surrounding the January 6, 2021 riot. Trump has repeatedly denied culpability for the attack. The American newspaper The Daily Beast has also covered this story. A U.S. District Court judge on Tuesday, 2nd of January, dismissed most of the civil counts against former President Donald Trump and several others for their alleged role in the death of U.S. Capitol Police officer Brian Sicknick, who died whilst defending the Capitol on 6th of January 2021, the day of the riot. Sicknick's partner, Sandra Garza, filed the lawsuit last January, alleging wrongful death, conspiracy to violate civil rights, two counts of negligence under an anti-riot law in Washington, D.C., and a claim under the D.C. Survival Act. But on Tuesday, 2nd of January, U.S. District Court Judge Amit Mehta, an appointee of former President Barack Obama, dismissed three out of the five counts, leaving only the conspiracy to violate civil rights charge and the D.C. Survival Act claim. The move is likely a win for Donald Trump and his fellow defendants, though the lawsuit will still move forward with the core allegations on which it was filed. Police officer Brian Sicknick was killed in the 6th of January 2021 attack after rioter Julian Carter sprayed him with a chemical spray from less than 8 feet away, causing Sicknick to collapse. Officer Brian Sicknick died the following day at a local hospital. The District of Columbia's chief medical examiner said that Sicknick died of natural causes, but that all that transpired on 6th of January 2021 had played a role in his condition which led to his death. Newsweek magazine has also covered the same story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump has been handed a court victory after a federal judge dropped a civil lawsuit's wrongful death claim filed against him. Donald Trump was named alongside convicted January 6 rioters Julian Carter and George Tanios in a lawsuit filed by Sandra Garza, the partner of deceased U.S. Capitol Police officer Brian Sicknick. Sicknick died one day after the 6th of January 2021 attack, having been assaulted and sprayed with chemicals by rioters who were storming the Capitol in an ill-fated attempt to stop the certification of President Joe Biden's 2020 presidential election victory. On Tuesday, 2nd of January 2024, U.S. District Judge Amit Mehta dismissed the lawsuit's wrongful death and negligence claims, ruling that Sandra Garza lacked standing to bring the claims because she was not married or a legal domestic partner to Officer Brian Sicknick. However, Judge Amit Mehta allowed part of the lawsuit to continue. Donald Trump and his co-defendants could still be found in violation of Washington, D.C.'s Survival Act and liable of conspiracy to violate civil rights. Sandra Garza is seeking $30 million in damages. Garza's lawyer, Mark Zay, told NBC News that he was pleased to see that one lawsuit in pursuit of justice for a late Capitol Police officer, Brian Sicknick, was permitted to continue. "We are now considering our next step and our next options to include deposing former President Donald Trump," he added. The lawsuit was filed by Sandra Garza on 5th of January 2023, just one day before the second anniversary of the Capitol riot. The lawsuit's wrongful death claim asserted that Donald Trump and his co-defendants were directly and vicariously liable for police officer Brian Sicknick's death. Sandra Garza argued that Brian Sicknick died following intentional words and actions by the defendants, claiming that Donald Trump was the mastermind behind the Capitol attack and had incited rioters by repeatedly making false claims that the 2020 election was stolen from him. Dr. Francisco Diaz, Washington, D.C.'s chief medical examiner, ruled in April of 2021 that Brian Sicknick had died of natural causes on 7th of January 2021, after suffering two strokes, having collapsed in his office shortly after facing the rioters. Donald Trump has not been charged with any crime directly related to police officer Brian Sicknick's death. However, he's facing 91 felony counts that include charges related to attempts to overturn the 2020 presidential election and an ensuing Capitol attack. The former president is also facing multiple lawsuits, including a case brought by 8 Capitol police officers who say they were violently assaulted, spat on, tear gassed, beer sprayed, subjected to racial slurs and epithets, and put in fear for their lives.
Aperture.
A visit to Iran yields a stunning variety of culinary delights. There's a vast spectrum of foods flourishing for centuries and evolving since Achaemenid times. Persian cooking incorporates many flavors into its uniquely delicious food traditions. A taste of Persia's food can be identified by its sumptuous rice dishes, its intriguing and delicate flavors, and its combination of herbs, spice, fruit, and nuts. And one integral component to Persian cuisine is the use of saffron, the world's most expensive spice, which gives Iranian food its distinct flavor and aroma and golden hue. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Many coveted ingredients are native to Iran, including pistachios, almonds, walnuts, pomegranates, grapes, and perhaps most notably, saffron. Iran has a variable climate with four distinct seasons. The ancient Persians transformed vast stretches of arid land into fertile oases through underground aquifers that drew melted snow water into the desert. And thus, a bright, sensuous, fruit and herb-filled cuisine was born. This week on Aperture, we will follow Javad Gharayi as he explores the amazing deserts of South Khorasan province and visits a charming little village where saffron, the world's most highly prized spice, is grown. Don't miss the first part.
This time, I leave the cold winter weather in the capital city for the beautiful desert flower farms. My destination is the outskirts of South Khorasan province, an area famous for its saffron, Iran's prized red gold. Iran is one of the most mountainous countries in the world, covered by rugged mountain ranges and deserts. 61% of the country has a dry climate. Deserts cover a combined area of around 34 million hectares, scattered among 18 of its provinces. That means around 30% of the country is made up of vast deserts featuring many mountains, salt pans, and sand dunes. Deserts across the world share almost the same features. Little precipitation, intense evaporation of water due to the scorching sun, smothering heat, dry air, great temperature fluctuations, poor vegetation, and a dearth of adequate organic compounds in the soil. However, despite the hostile climate of the deserts of Iran, life is in progress on their margins. I'm Javad Gharayi. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm taking you on a journey to the most pristine areas of my beloved country and showing you their many beauties. Before visiting the saffron grove, I decide to take a look around at the desert surroundings on the outskirts of South Khorasan province. To that end, I begin my journey with Halwan Desert, located within 90 kilometers of Tabas, a city in and the capital of Tabas County, in the northwest of South Khorasan. Because of its distance from the urban areas, the natural beauties of deserts are not known to humans as much as they should. If you want to venture out into the desert in order to admire its matchless beauties, you'd have to choose the right season and the right time of day. From a distance, deserts and the wilderness don't seem all that beautiful. Once you've set foot in them, you feel as if you've stepped into a veritable heaven. But a different kind of heaven, You don't see forests with tall trees, grass, or running water. All you can see is streams with very salty water, single salt cedars and saxholes, scattered shrubs and bushes in the landscape, camels and other species unique to this hot and dry climate. It's very beautiful and peaceful here, but that's not always the case. Within minutes, this whole area can turn into an ominously stormy ocean. Ferocious storms of sand and dust that have buried many a caravan and traveler over the course of centuries. In the not-too-distant past, some of Iran's deserts were inhabited by people living in this climate. But thanks to global warming and decreased precipitation that led to drinking water wells drying and parts of the vegetation dying, the people living in such areas were forced to leave their little villages for a better place. Today, those villages lay in ruins on their original locations, ruins that now serve as shelters for the camel herders against the blazing sun. But these homes of yesterday are still as beautiful as ever. Deserts around the world are expanding by the year. Desert expansion or desertification is a result of global warming, the growth in the human population, unplanned agriculture and excessive firewood collection, depletion of subterranean water resources, industrial contaminants and excessive use of fossil fuels, overgrazing by livestock, and the change in the use of agricultural land. This conversion of habitable and fertile land to uninhabitable desert can happen naturally due to a drought, or can be caused by human activities. Activities that have disturbed the balance of nature on planet Earth. Iran accounts for more than 2% of the world's drought. It's also home to more than 8% of the deserts and arid lands that contain no vegetation, and that is considered a big number. But in the fringes of this same hot and dry desert, meaning the one in South Khorasan, there are mountains that supply the rivers and qanats in this area with drinking water. Streams that could be regarded as the natural wonders of this otherwise parched region. Taht-e-Arus, or the bride's throne, near the village of Izmiran on the Tabas-Mashhad road, is a befitting name for this stream. The flowing water reminds me of the celebrations held by people in the old times upon the discovery of clean, fresh water in a hot and dry region. Only those born and bred in a dry climate with limited resources of fresh water appreciate its true value. People who have endured thirst, have felt the baking heat from the sun on their skin, and may have seen rain coming down from the skies over their heads only once a year. The people of Izmiran fit that profile perfectly. God has bestowed upon them fresh water in a stream gushing out of the dry desert mountains around Tebas. And the people here have utmost appreciation for this most precious of God's blessings in the heart of the natural world. In the distant past, the people of Izmiran lived in dwellings carved into mountain wall. With the tools they had, they would dig deep vertical and horizontal holes into the side of the mountains. In them, they'd carve out rooms where they'd live. In the past, these hand-carved chambers were referred to as loons. Desert people are very smart. Using the water from the stream and the fertile soil here, they've been farming rice for generations. Today, the rice produced in Esmiran is among the best in the country. Who would believe there are paddy fields in the middle of a desert and among these mountains? Everybody thinks rice is only grown in the north of Iran. But where does the stream go on this dry land after irrigating the paddy fields of Esmiran? Does it sink into the arid terrain in the areas surrounding the rice farms? That can't be the case, because to the desert dwellers, fresh water is worth more than diamonds. The locals in this area have spoken to me of a formidable yet beautiful canyon and helped me see the rest of the course that the water from Takhtiaru spring takes. The name of that canyon is Kali Jenny, the Canal of Jinns, shaped by water movement and erosion over centuries. I'm going to step into a canyon where the water from Takhtiaru spring is flowing, but the volume of the water is not large enough to make it to the end of this very long course without going to waste. I'm curious to know how that water continues on its path in the dry land and where it eventually gets to. It's simply beautiful. As I said, the name of the awe-inspiring canyon is Kali Jenny. On its bottom, water from the Takhtiaru spring of Tabaz is moving as we speak. Most of the way, the water flows between the two walls of this canyon, just like it does in a Qanat, and springs out of the underground near Tabaz. It's one of the most beautiful sights to see around the city of Tabaz in South Khorasan province. The Canal of Jinns. That's a scary name. Kali Jenny was shaped so beautifully by water movements, such as seasonal rain-induced floodwaters over thousands or millions of years. It kind of looks like the Grand Canyon in the U.S., though it doesn't share the same depth. It really is stunning. After a long walk in the mountains, I arrive at the upper end of the canyon. From up here, it's a spectacular deep gorge. I explore the canyon as much as I can and as long as there is nothing to threaten my life. But as I walk the length of it, water from Takhtiaru spring is nowhere to be found most of the way. The locals have already given me valuable information about that, but to see everything firsthand, I have to walk down to the bottom of the valley, and I do so with gusto and caution. One of the things that renders Kali Jenny even more remarkable is its pristineness. Not many nature travelers come here. Unfortunately, those who do don't leave behind any kind of waste or garbage. And that has turned this canyon into one of the most must-see natural sites in the Tabaz area. There are qanats here. In some places, water has pushed its way out, but there are still other qanats inside walls that continue all the way to the villages of Tabaz. And this water originates from the Takhtiaru spring in Esmiran province. It's the same water that's come all the way here and has welled out. In the absence of plumbing in the past, they would channel fresh water from one village to another or from the mountains to their villages and farms by means of a qanat system, and they did it to prevent the water from going to waste. This one here is one of those qanats. Out on the bottom of the canyon, the water would sink into the ground. So they channeled the water downhill through a series of gently sloping tunnels along several kilometers to the places where it was needed for irrigation and domestic use. Although new qanats are seldom built today, many old ones are still used in Iran and have until recently served as one of the main reasons behind the continuation of life in areas with hot and dry climates. New technology has in recent years led to a rapid depletion of the underground water reservoirs, but we can still think of reviving the qanat water supply system, take advantage of this millennia-old experience for agricultural purposes in Iran, and do something to make it happen. I knew very well that the rainfall in the eastern regions of the country is less than half the rain that falls in the western regions. Therefore, water is much more valuable in this part of the country. The people living in these parts have always been thinking of innovative ways of harnessing water and managing its resources. Digging ghanats and channeling underground water onto the surface was very common in Iran. They didn't cost much, and they were very efficient. Ghanats offered several advantages. Firstly, they prevent the sun from shining directly at the water and making it evaporate. Secondly, moving inside the mountains, not much of the water is absorbed by the bedding walls of the channel. And thirdly, the water is immune to any and all kinds of contamination and flows to its destination clean and cool. What's certain is that humans wouldn't have been able to survive in the desert areas if they hadn't built the ghanats. Almost all researchers believe that the world's first ghanats were built in areas under Iran's cultural influence. No one knows for sure why the ancient dwellers of this region named this gorge the Kali Jinni. But apparently, some of them believe this canyon was haunted by jinns or ghosts. There were others who believed the idea of digging holes and caves into the mountainside for safety was something that even ghosts wouldn't have been able to come up with. Or maybe the reason why this canyon was named the Canal of Jinns was the roaring seasonal floodwaters that swept along this canyon and still do today. Whatever the name, it must have been chosen for a reason. It defies belief that there is so much water in the Kali Jinni Canyon. To the people of southern Khorasan province, each drop of this water is worth as much as a kilo of saffron, and this canyon has a lot of it. It looks like someone has chiseled away at the rocks. The only sound you can hear in the mountains is that of the water rippling along the ghanats. Eventually, I get to a point in the canyon where the ancient dwellers of this land redirected the water from the surface to a canal inside the mountain. This is where the water is redirected underground. It was the brainchild of folks who lived here in the distant past, and that beautiful ghanat dug inside the wall of the canyon carries this water to the villages lying on the outskirts of Tabas. The locals have told me different things about the cavities and man-made holes inside the Kali Jinni. Apparently, no one has accurate information on the age of those cave-like shelters. But tales of how they came to be have been passed down from one generation to another. I spend hours scouring the canyon for those man-made tunnels, and I finally find them. It is hard to believe how these tunnels were hand-carved at this height. Niches that acted as footholds to help them climb some 5 or 6 meters to get to the chambers above, where they are likely to have lived. And that was where they felt safe. It's still not clear why these tunnels, these wells, and these chambers were dug into the walls of this canyon and at this height by the people in the past. But many believe they actually lived here. This was the perfect place for people to take shelter in and survive the stifling heat of the Tabas region. And there are many others who believe this was a place where the village dwellers around here, who wanted to steer clear of the brigands and looters, would transfer all their valuable belongings. They themselves would hide here too, along with their belongings, and wait for the looters to leave the area. Of course, there are also others who are of the opinion that these tunnels were just the right place for the people of that time to come to and worship their gods, that in fact they considered this place as their place of worship. They call it the Canal of Jinns for a reason. It can get really scary in some parts, and it's obvious that torrential floodwaters have shaped this valley like this over the years. In fact, what those floodwaters did was wash away the dirt and stones on their path. Of course, it might have taken millions of years for this canyon to take on the shape it has today. It's frightening to be here and walking on the bottom flanked by tall walls. It looks endless to me. I've been walking these smaller gorges near Kalajini for hours, but it looks like there is no end in sight. I haven't been able to get to the other end of any of them. The deeper you go inside, you realize you have more to go. This is a completely virgin valley with no traces whatsoever of human activity in it. Usually, garbage is the first sign of human presence in the natural world. It's clear to me that only people who feel responsible to nature have been to this area before. That is because there is no trash on the ground and no writings on the walls. That has made my trip into the heart of the canyon ever more worthwhile and helped me appreciate its magnificence more intensely. My visit to the Kalajini Canyon has come to an end. I got to see beautiful sights in the canyon from different angles. The canyon has a scary name, but that didn't change my mind about traveling right into it and exploring it. I continue my trek in the desert, this time to see the desert flower, commonly known as the saffron crocus. That means an approximately 200-kilometer walking distance from the Kalajini Canyon. On my way there, the imposing ruins of an ancient building grab my attention. They are the remains of a desolate village by the name of Dihuk. Iranian deserts always have wonderful surprises for travelers, and this beautiful ancient village is one of them. What really tugs at my heartstrings, though, is that the villagers have abandoned these buildings with their unique architecture for brick-and-mortar homes. It saddens me to see traditional Iranian architecture consigned to oblivion by my fellow Iranians in cities and villages. Today, Iranian architecture that encompasses life and vitality, art and aesthetic beauties, and love and positive energy is being replaced by ghastly steel and mortar structures. Architecture that's alien to the Persian culture. Architecture that bears no signs of the ancient Persian culture and doesn't include the freshness, the gardens, the water pools, and other natural features characteristic of traditional Persian architecture. Such homes do not belong in our country, and I wish they'd never been built. In my opinion, this ancient village is one of the most beautiful villages I've ever seen in this area. The people here, I mean the people who used to live here, call this village Ancient Dihuk. Now, they live in a small township by the same name, built around 20 to 25 years ago. It was built after the earthquake in the year 1978. So now they call this place Old Dihuk, which, as I say, is one of the most beautiful villages on the margins of the Lut Desert.
Think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Zionist media reported that 1,600 Zionist troops show symptoms of combat stress reaction as the regime's mental health system faces collapse. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, according to Zionist media, at least 1,600 Zionist regime troops show symptoms of combat stress reaction, and 250 were discharged from service for this reason. The Zionist Regime News website, Walla, reported recently that symptoms of battle combat stress reaction have appeared on at least 1,600 Israeli troops since the start of the ground operation in the Gaza Strip about 2 months ago. According to the report, the symptoms can appear during or after an activity, and the soldiers can feel, among other things, rapid heartbeat, sweating, a sudden increase in blood pressure, uncontrollable body shaking, confusion, and inability to move. If the symptoms continue for more than 4 weeks, the soldier's condition may deteriorate into severe post-traumatic stress disorder. Walla reported, adding that about 250 soldiers were discharged from service due to persistent symptoms of combat stress reaction. Aside from the Zionist regime's troops, demand for mental health services has been growing due to the Gaza war, and the system is facing collapse, according to a report published by the Zionist regime's newspaper Haaretz. According to Haaretz, the situation is made even worse by the fact that dozens of psychiatrists working in Israel's public mental health system have left recently for Britain. Haaretz cited Dr. Shamuel Hirschman, head of the Mental Health Center Directors Forum, as saying that the system is short about 400 psychiatrists. The forum reportedly wrote a letter to the regime's comptroller recently to address the issue. The letter reportedly read, "We turn to you in desperation concerning the difficult situation of the mental health system in Israel." The letter also said the events of October 7th resulted in an estimated 300,000 additional patients who require treatment by a trained professional, adding that it is not yet known how many of those fighting in the Gaza Strip will suffer post-war trauma. The Zionist regime has relentlessly targeted the Gaza Strip since October 7th. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, 22,185 Palestinians have been martyred and 57,053 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza starting on October 7th. Palestinian and international estimates say that the majority of those martyred and wounded are women and children. Meanwhile, Press TV reported that the Zionist regime's latest aggression against Syria, which resulted in the assassination of a senior Iranian military advisor, is a sign of desperation, as resistance movements in the region have pushed the Zionist regime on the back foot amid the Gaza war. Recently, Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi, a senior commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, and a military advisor serving in Syria, was assassinated in an airstrike in the vicinity of Sayed Zainab in the countryside of Damascus. Mousavi was a seasoned military advisor and one of the IRGC commanders entrusted with the Syrian file, in charge of providing logistical support to the axis of resistance in Syria. The IRGC statement noted that Mousavi was a comrade of Iran's top anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, the former head of the IRGC Quds Force, who was assassinated in a U.S. airstrike in Iraq in January 2020. Mousavi had reportedly survived multiple assassination attempts over the past several years. Recently, Israel's Channel 14 described Mousavi as the director of the liaison office between Damascus and Tehran, showing he had been under the Zionist scanner for a long time. Hossein Akbari, Iran's ambassador to Syria, told media persons that Three missiles hit his home near Damascus only hours after he had returned from the Iranian embassy. Akbari stressed that Mousavi held a diplomatic passport and a residence, and that, according to 1961 and 1973 International Convention, his assassination constitutes a blatant crime. The Iranian envoy also stated that the slain IRGC commander's place of residence was well known, so the Zionist regime's terror attack did not require extensive intelligence work. It was not the first such foolhardy act. Earlier in December, the Zionist regime killed two IRGC military advisors, Muhammad Ali Atai Shurche and Panah Taghizadeh, in an attack in Syria. Iran maintains an advisory mission in Syria at the request of Damascus to help the Arab country get rid of foreign-backed terrorists who have been fighting the Syrian government since 2011. The Zionist regime and the United States regime have been hand-in-glove with Daesh, ISIS, and other terrorist groups in Syria, carrying out frequent attacks on forces associated with the Syrian government and its allies.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance field. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on September 20, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. By referring to the work that our youth carried out in those days during the Sacred Defense, we can now confidently say that our youth can solve all of the country's problems today. When it is said, in changes of circumstances, the essences of humans become known. Nahjul Balagha, Wisdom 217. It is not just about people. It is about societies as well. You can see the true colors of a society in difficult, problematic events. We did not know ourselves, and neither did other people. The world did not know us either. During the Sacred Defense, we learned about ourselves, and others learned about us too. Those who were making so many false claims in the world realized who we are.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Another achievement of the Sacred Defense was safeguarding the country. It safeguarded the country. In other words, the Sacred Defense safeguarded the country against possible military attacks to a large extent. They kept saying that military action is also on the table, but it did not even budge from the table because they knew that if they were to enter this field, they may be able to initiate it, but they will not be the ones to finish it. This was what the Sacred Defense demonstrated. This is another achievement. Deep, sincere faith, strong, firm determination, the intelligence of the Iranian youth, the ability of military and non-military elements to use initiative and innovation, and the ability to overcome global aggressors were the things that were revealed and seen about our nation and our soldiers during the sacred defense. Well, the nation itself recognized these things. Naturally, when we recognize and understand that we have these abilities, our hope will increase, our vitality will increase, and we will try to use these capabilities even more. We can use these capabilities in other fields as well. This is one of the important achievements of the sacred defense. Another achievement of the sacred defense was that it expanded our frontiers.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
United as always, Iranians gathered after Friday prayers in the capital Tehran to show their outrage at acts of terror in the country after scores of people were killed.